Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
The new Mel Gibson tapes, and then we're going to have tapes of the black racist at the USDA, whose goose was cooked today by her own words, and she was fired. No doubt because she is a black racist, she will not only not be banned in England by Cameron, she'll be invited to England and be given an audience with the Queen. So let us begin with a choice. Let's first play the music that is dedicated to the memory of Mel Gibson and Oksana when they first met. Let's begin with this song. So he's in love, 90 days, it lasts 90 days, according to Professor Savage. The passion, the love, the girl is the earth angel, the world is going to open up for you like Moses in the Red Sea, you found nirvana, you're going to have one happy day after another. It's been studied worldwide since Roman times, and it's been found to last between 89 and 92 days. Then on the 93rd day, here is what you hear in clip 7. 93rd day.
You are losing your mind. You need medication.
You need a kick up the ass for being a gold digging with a gun. And I want my child, and no one will believe you. So you.
All right. Then on day 120, we get clip 8. Here's what happens to Earth Angel on clip 8.
And I'm not giving you my house, and you can rot unless you crawl back, suck and say you're sorry in that order. Do you understand me? You offend my maleness, my masculinity, my being, my soul. And you call me a sinner. You're a moving violation. Showing off your fake like they're some special deal.
Are you
How
crazy?
How much do they cost, those fakers?
Are you crazy?
You complain about mastitis. They're fake, baby. Come on, you got little bladders in there. You think I'm an idiot?
It's sad, but that's what happens after about 4 months. So we go from Earth Angel to the following song in every relationship. Now we come to the next stage, which is the Rammstein inside the male. This is what the male feels after 140 days of Earth Angel.
Du hast mich. Du hast mich. Du hast mich.
All right, after approximately 160 days, Earth Angel is heard in clip 9.
Have you said everything?
I said nothing! You need to say a lot to assuage my insanity because you made me this way.
I didn't make you this way.
You did so.
You were born this way. And you yell and scream and threaten everybody around you. Everybody's fitting around you because they'll scare shitless out of you. But you paying
a bunch of using like you. You're like every other.
And then, of course, sadly, in every relationship, it doesn't matter whether it's in Serbia or in Hollywood, after approximately 180 days, the only music that will work will be Pantera with Broken. Let's hear Pantera, and you'll know where we're coming from here on the Savage Nation.
I wonder if we'll smile.
So in other words, half the audience already turned the show off. They don't know what I'm talking about. They have no idea what I was doing. It's actually very good radio that I just did. For those who understand, about 1% of the audience got it. So instead of doing that and having you have it to use your brain, we will talk instead about Shirley Sherrod, the brilliant U.S. Department of Agriculture employee who was found on tape. Thank God for Andrew Breitbart, who will join us at 30 minutes after the hour. Where a tape of her talking about withholding help to a white man facing the loss of his family farm can be heard. Now, the remarks were purportedly from a speech the black bureaucrat gave at an NAACP Freedom Fund banquet on March 27, 2010, in Douglas, Georgia. And she was fired as a result of it. The fact of the matter is she should have been fired. But it raises a bigger issue. First, we're going to play a little piece of Georgia State USDA Rural Development Director Shirley Sherrod while speaking at the 20th annual NAACP Freedom Fund Banquet. That's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Let's begin first with the last clip 26. You'll get a flavor of it.
So I took him to a white lawyer. I figured by taking one of them that his own kind would take care of him.
His own kind? His own kind would take care of him? Oh, wow. That's pretty heavy. Now, of course, people who would normally be pimps but have jobs on CNN are covering for her, saying she didn't really say what she said, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, even the USDA had to fire her. Even the NAACP, that's the National Association for the Advancement Only of Colored People, President Benjamin Jealous, said that the organization concurred with the firing of Sherrod, saying, quote, racism is about the abuse of power. Sherrod had it in her position at USDA. According to her remarks, she mistreated a white farmer in need of assistance because of his race, close quote. Now, I have a bigger question for the audience, and I know it's a sensitive question, but I think it's a very important one. Since I believe it was Obama himself, no, I believe it was our esteemed Attorney General, Eric Holder, who was also of African descent. Eric Holder, who said that America is a nation of cowards because we will not talk about race. And I think now that Obama has stirred up racial enmity in America to a level that's not been seen since the 1950s, at least, and they're getting what they want, which is a nice, healthy dialogue about race, I think that we should have a conversation about race so that Mr. Holder can't accuse us of being cowardly. Therefore, I ask members of my audience who happen to be of Caucasian descent, or shall I say European Americans, if you wish, have you ever been subject to racism from a government bureaucrat who was not of Caucasian descent, where you were abused, neglected, spat at, verbally laughed at, in some way, in other words, treated like a lesser? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. We're open for business. Let us now listen to Georgia State USDA Rural Development Director Shirley Sherrod while speaking at the 20th Annual National Association for the Advancement of Colored People Freedom Fund Banquet. Let's hear it from the top. Now, you can't understand that it's unintelligible. She said what he didn't know while he was taking all that time trying to show me he was superior to me was I, meaning her, the bureaucrat, I was trying to decide how much help I was going to give him. In other words, she's trying to figure out how to screw him. So now let's listen to the next one of Sherrod.
Say giving him the full force of what I could do.
Hold on. So I didn't give him the full force of what I could do. Now, I got to ask you something. We have a white farmer who's losing his farm. He goes to the USDA. He gets a black racist who tries to work him over. She says she gave him to a lawyer of his own kind. She says she doesn't give him all the full force of what she could give him. And I ask you, is America turning into the new Zimbabwe? And also, I want to hear about government horror stories, especially if you are of European-American descent and you've tried to deal with any of the bureaucrats in the state, local, national level who are not of European-American descent, and they know you are of European-American descent, and they abuse you because they finally have some power and they want to use it against you. And the only reason I'm doing this, of course, is because our esteemed attorney general said that we are cowards when it comes to race. And I decided that, you know, he's right. We are cowards when it comes to race. So I figured it's time to have a nice, healthy discussion about race right here on the Savage Nation. And I will be back to take your calls. Savage.
Get to the heart of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
Well, I guess the Attorney General is right. Especially European Americans are cowards when it comes to talking about racism they experience every day. From minorities who have gained some power. And since a black bureaucrat has now been found out, caught on tape, recounting the story with glee of how she deliberately discriminated against a white farmer who was losing his farm, I think that it's time to talk about race. I think the Attorney General is correct. And I think that now we're going to have a nice discussion about race. And I invite European Americans listening to this show to tell their tale of their dealings with people who are not of European-American descent, whether it be in a federal, state, or local office. And you say, well, why are you doing it? Well, the answer is because we don't want to be cowardly, because we believe that Eric Holder is correct, that we're cowards, really, afraid to tell the truth of what we've been experiencing these many years. And I think this will go a long way towards healing the wounds and perhaps fixing the rift between the races. Because after all, a healthy dialogue is certainly to be welcomed, according to liberals. And so we want to have a healthy dialogue. As a side note, I told you yesterday as the show came to an end that I had to do jury duty today, but that after the show I would be calling a certain number to find that if the jury pool I had been assigned would be called today. Well, as you know, I live in perhaps the most liberal county in the world, far more liberal than Havana, where even Fidel is talking against state jobs while Obama is adding them with Pelosi. What Obama and Pelosi are doing to the job front is something that even Fidel Castro is moving away from. But as I say, I live in a county that is even more liberal than that of the county surrounding Havana, whatever that county may be. And so I called this number to see if I'd be on jury duty today, and I swear as God is my witness, the speech that was given, the recorded message, rather, for those who were calling in, had been recorded by a person with a speech defect who had been hired by the county specifically because he had a speech defect. In order to show how liberal they were, they hired him, he, with a speech defect, to make a recorded message that was almost unintelligible and indecipherable. And it was impossible to follow. But somehow in listening to it, I found out that the group I had been assigned to was not going to be called today, and I'd be off the hook for a year. That's an example of the upside-down, backwards America that we're living in today. Notes for the Savage Nation. Are we now living in Zimbabwe under Obama? Of course not. We're not living in Zimbabwe. White farms haven't been seized. But we hear about a white farmer who was trying to save his farm being turned away, basically, by a black bureaucrat who was boasting before the NAACP how she abused him and how she sent him to a white lawyer, saying, I figured if I take him to one of his own kind, they would take care of him. Can you believe this? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm asking you for your European-American abuse horror stories. Let's begin in Houston, Texas. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, when I was a police officer with the Houston Police Department, I'd been an officer for about 5 years, and I applied to be a recruiter for the HPD recruiting division. And there was an interview board of like 10 people, and I swear to you, every one of them was a different race or gender association. So you had a black female, black male, a Hispanic female, a Hispanic male, all the way around the board, respectively. And I was told basically after the interview by the Hispanic male that was on the board that they were not interested in hiring me for the position because I was a white male. And in fact, they had already decided that on the black male that they were going to put into that position. And it was explained to me the reason being.
Well, that's how it's done in Zimbabwe. I mean, you wouldn't expect you to be living in the U.S., would you? After all, when you have a racially insensitive federal bureaucracy that will take the side of illegal aliens, a racially insane federal bureaucracy that will take the side of terror nations like Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, who is suing Arizona, I would think that you'd understand by now that it's the people versus the government.
I understand, but more importantly, when I went to the EEOC and explained to them what was happening, what I was told, and I still, to this, I can't believe I was told this, but because I was a white male, a straight white male under the age of 45, I was told by the EEOC, and I still have the letter that, quote, I did not belong to a protected class of citizens that the EEOC would protect.
That's right. The EEOC is in business only to harass white people. The EEOC exists specifically to make sure white people are not given jobs.
Yeah, correct. And I mean,
you can quote me. I don't care who gets offended by it. I have dealt with the EEOC. The EEOC is a racist group within the government that will only take cases that discriminate against white people. Okay. Eric Holder said we're cowards when it comes to race. So here in the Savage Nation, we choose not to be cowards.
Savage.
There were some who suggested that somehow we had entered into a post-racial America. That didn't work out so well.
So I took him to a white lawyer. I figured if I take him to one of them, that his own kind would take care of him.
I found my thrill
on Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill.
Stop it, Eddie. Throw you out of here.
When I found you.
So as I say, although this is difficult, it's like pulling teeth. It's sort of like getting bad dental work today. But it has to be done because the Attorney General is 100% right. He said America is cowardly when it comes to discussions of race. And it's primarily people of European American descent who are cowardly because they're afraid of offending. They're afraid to offend non-European Americans, and so they kind of keep it within, and they harbor all of these observations and feelings about racism that are being inflicted upon them, whether it's affirmative action stealing their jobs, or whether it's been diversity training, which is a way of hating white people and hating Christianity in particular. They keep it within. They suffer in silence, and so therefore the Attorney General is correct. We need to have a conversation about race. I have a question that has been plaguing me for a while. I'm a somewhat educated man, somewhat well-traveled, and of a certain age, but I can't figure something out. Why is it that civilization seems to have advanced so at such a different pace in the Northern Hemisphere than it has in the Southern Hemisphere? For example, why is it when you look at England or Germany or France or Norway, you look at Norway, incredibly, pristinely beautiful nation, and you see the advanced civilization that had developed in Norway, the buildings, the homes, and most of the inventions, of course, that we are enjoying today are derived primarily from the European mind. Almost the largest percentage of the greatest inventions Unfortunately, for those of you who would like to twist history, have come from Europeans, and I can name at least 20 of the most important inventions that the earth has ever seen. Why is it? Can anyone explain that to me? Is it a product of the climate itself, since climate is in the air? Is it some other reason? I mean, you know, you don't want to go there, but the fact is something doesn't add up here. Why is it that very little has come out of the southern hemisphere? Now, this is not specifically targeted at any one particular race, but, I mean, you look around the globe. Most of what the world has enjoyed and is enjoying in terms of inventions are the products of the European mind. Why is that? Can anyone explain that to me? I mean, since we're having this discussion, can we have it in an adult manner that doesn't really go over the line with offensiveness? I mean, I suppose just raising the question will be offensive to some who know that the answer may not be that pleasant. Does anyone want to take that on? Or should we go back to the baby talk? The baby talk being, if you are of European American descent, why don't you tell your bureaucrat horror story how you were abused or neglected by a person who was not of European American descent, who you know picked on you because you were white? Let's put it to you that way in the plain vernacular, right? So let's go to, you know, all of the cities here. Okay, New York, WOR, Bob, tell us your bureaucrat horror story.
Mike, hold on to your seatbelt. You're not going to believe this. I was working as a pension auditor for 3 years with the largest hospital nursing home union in New York City. After 3 years, the vice president comes up to me and says, Frank, it's not me, it's upstairs. They want a black guy in your job. I says, I'll sue your ass so bad. I sued and I collected. And let me tell you how I did it. I went down to the Civil Rights Bureau in Hempstead, and I said to them my situation. She said to me, fill out this application. I filled it out. She read it down to the bottom. She says, reverse discrimination? Don't you mean age? Read my lips. Reverse discrimination, that was a black guy in my job. And I want a black guy to represent me. Mike, I sued. I got paid.
How much did you win, Bob?
I made a settlement because I had a job right away.
Well, you know what? That's what America needs, is guys with guts and drive like you to not roll over to this.
Exactly.
That's all. And by the way, I have a little advice. You know how Oksana wore a wire when she called up Mel Gibson? You know, you ought to wear a wire when you talk to a bureaucrat from now on. You ought to put them on the defensive. I think every American who ever calls any governmental agency should be wearing a wire. You should record them, every last one of them. When they pick up and you hear their arrogant voice, or they ignore you or abuse you, just say quietly, be like Oksana. Oh, say, can you say that again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. And then repeat their name. Did you say your name was Roberta Wallace? Roberta Wallace. Oh, and you work for the USDA, Roberta? Oh, my God. What did you say, Roberta? And get a, you know, I don't know why you're saying that, Roberta. I'm a nice white man. Why would you do that to me? You know what? Wire them and sue them and take them to court. That's all. Then you're going to get your rights. Then you don't have to suffer in silence anymore. It's better than becoming a talk show host, isn't it? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I think to break up the tension of this particular discussion, I think we need to insert a little bit of the poor Mel Gibson tape for one reason. Not only is it shocking, but you can see that he actually has a built-in defense. These tapes have, in my opinion, been edited. She was edited in because her sound quality, the sound quality of Oksana, that's Gibson's Rojo, is much different than his soundbite. And if you listen to the Rojo sound, it's much different than that of Mel Gibson. And he also says that I'm insane. He says he's insane. She drove him insane, so that's a defense. So listen now to the Rojo and Mel Gibson in clip number 9.
Have you said everything?
I said nothing! You need to say a lot to assuage my insanity because you made me this way.
I didn't make you this way.
You did so.
You were born this way. And you yell and scream and threaten everybody around you. Everybody's fitting around you because they'll scare the out of you. But you ping.
A bunch of using like you. You're like every other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, clip 10 now of the Rujo and Mel Gibson.
My God, what an ego. Nobody would dare tell you that. You're paying them money, for God's sake.
What?
Nobody will tell you that. You're paying them money.
Oh, like you, huh?
I don't need anything from you, okay? I will disappear from your life, just like I came in.
Credit card, you callous. You never even say thank you.
Yes, I have, many times.
I say thank you every 5 minutes. And not call me mean. And that you, that's all you're good for. That's about all you're good at. That's better than music. You there?
Better than your music. It's sad. So play Earth Angel, because that's how it all begins. It all begins with Earth Angel, and it ends up with You Know What. That's just the nature of the beast. Play clip Earth Angel. You have that, or you lost it already, went into the Netherlands. Starts with Earth Angel. The next thing you know, you're Mel Gibson walking the wire. And then if you're lucky, you get over it. Then if you're lucky, you get past this phase. See, this is... Oh, let me stop right here. Let me give you some wisdom. I'm not saying I know this from personal experience. I know this from studying life 101. In the old days, I wouldn't say it was to this extent, but you know, what do you think? This is the first marriage on earth where this kind of screaming and yelling went on? No, I don't think so. But in the old days, the people actually did this and they stuck together. Then they got over it and they moved on with their life. Today, the young people, if they look at each other the wrong way, right away they're in a divorce court. Or if she comes home with the wrong dress, he's already not in love with her and he wants a divorce. Or whatever the reason, I mean, I can give you some trivial things. People just don't have the staying power. So you're saying, well, this is it is shocking to listen to. But, you know, it's the primal scream. What you're hearing is the agony of a primal male, an alpha male, who's been shafted by a Rujo, who set him up, in my opinion, strictly for his money, took him down, did the leg lock on him, got the baby, and that was the end of the road. She knew she had the golden ticket. She had the golden ticket, the leg lock, and boom, the next step is Gibson screaming into the air, almost like a blinded man. He reminds me almost of the voice that I hear in this man of Samson having been blinded by dwarves and being put in the arena to be tortured on hot coals. And, of course, you could say, well, you can only blame him. You could look at it any way you want. Some hate him for this. Some have compassion for him. Nobody has compassion for the Rujo because they know, although Gibson was pretty crazy here and vile, they understand that she set him up. There's no question about it. I believe she should be investigated by the Los Angeles Police Department for it's extortion. This is extortion as an amateur. I'm not a lawyer. It's alleged that they were offered $15 million for the tapes not to be released. And the Rujo and her lawyer, wait till we hear who that is, the lawyer comes out. Oh, I have some things to say about that, but I think I'll let that go. I think you can pretty much figure out what I think of that kind of lawyer. But they wouldn't take the money. Instead, they released this to destroy him. So now let's go back to the something that is a little more pedestrian, which is the story of a black female bureaucrat at the USDA who was caught on tape recounting the story of how she deliberately discriminated against a white farmer who was trying to save his farm, and then she gives him the coup de grace and says she turned him over to a white lawyer, saying, I figured if I take him to one of them, his own kind would take care of him. Now, thankfully, she was fired today, of course, with full pension. Full pension. We haven't found out what that pension might be, nor who will hire her tomorrow. But if you have a European-American racial horror story from a government bureaucrat who was not of European descent, and you know it to be not of your, that you know for a fact that they were not of European descent, or you know for a fact that you were picked on because you were white, in plain English. I don't use the word white because it has no real meaning. The correct phrase is European American descent. That's really as close as you're going to get to defining what we're talking about here. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Crazy. What a story just came out. You're not going to believe this one. Facebook lawyer is unsure whether Zuckerberg signed an 84% ownership contract. What's this about? First of all, Facebook must be worth billions of dollars. I don't know what it was sold for, but something like that. Listen to what just came out. A lawyer for Facebook Inc. said she was unsure whether company founder Mark Zuckerberg signed a contract that purportedly entitles a New York man to 84% of the world's biggest social networking service. Paul Seglia sued Facebook and Zuckerberg in state court June 30th, claiming that an April 2003 contract entitles him to ownership of most of the closely held company. Seglia's lawyer produced a copy of the document for the U.S. District Judge today at a hearing in federal court in Buffalo. The story is emerging, and the bottom line is, apparently, by what we are reading, the founder of Facebook, who is a billionaire many times over, I guess, may have signed a contract that purportedly entitles Paul Seglia to 84% of the world's biggest social networking service. So I guess if this is true, what they say is get it in writing, number one. And that comes back to our main topic today on the Savage Nation, which is when dealing with bureaucrats, especially middle-level bureaucrats in the federal government, where there is a safe haven, there's an awful lot of institutional racism towards white people. You ask people, and they'll tell you the truth behind the scenes. And the reason we're talking about this is because the Attorney General Holder said we're cowards when it comes to race and we don't really talk about it. So we need to clear the air on it. I think we're moving towards a better picture in America in the sense that this woman was fired today. And even the NAACP said it was correct to fire her because she abused her power. So if you are dealing with a bureaucrat, I think you should wire them, meaning anytime you go see them, talk to them on the phone, do what Oksana did to Mel Gibson. Okay? Today, Seglia's lawyer produced a copy of the document for U.S. District Judge Richard Arcara. Facebook lawyer Lisa Simpson said whether he signed this piece of paper, we're unsure at this moment. Oh, my God. Palo Alto, California-based Facebook, which hasn't claimed the alleged contract with Seglia is a phony, has serious questions about its authenticity, said the lawyer. This case is the latest challenge to the origins of Facebook, which is worth $24.6 billion. According to sharespost.com, a marketplace for closely held firms, $24.6 billion. Facebook's paternity was questioned in a suit by a group of Zuckerberg's former Harvard University schoolmates who claimed he used code developed on their ConnectU project to start Facebook. They settled in 2008. Facebook request. Well, it's a very amazing story. Right now, it has no effect whatsoever. However, it has been said today that Mr. Zuckerberg did have a contract with Mr. Seglia, Simpson said. Zuckerberg, 26, worked for Seglia as a computer coder, she said. Now, Facebook claims Mr. Seglia remained silent for more than 6 years, and his claim is probably too old to pursue. Also, Seglia claims his alleged contract, which refers to, quote, the Facebook, was signed about 9 months before Facebook was founded, the company said in court papers. Today in court, Seglia's attorney produced a copy of the two-page work-for-hire contract that his client said entitles him to control of the social networking service. This is amazing. Now, I got to read the rest of this to show you what's at stake. Connors, who was the lawyer for the claimant, Seglia, Connors told the judge that Seglia was a web designer trying to develop a project called Street Facts in the spring of 2003. Seglia's plan was to put millions of photos of streets into a database and charge insurers money to access it. What he needed was a coder, C-O-D-E-R. Seglia solicited bids to do the work. The lowest bidder was Zuckerberg, then a Harvard freshman. Zuckerberg said he would do the job for $1,000. But I've got a project of my own, Connor said, Zuckerberg told his client. I'm developing an online yearbook for Harvard kids now, but I'm thinking of expanding it. The contract was intended to cover the coding work on Street Facts and Seglia's investment in Zuckerberg's fledgling project, Connors said. Who knew then that it would turn into what it is today? In return to questions outside court, Connors declined to explain why it took Seglia so long to file his legal claim. He also declined to say whether Seglia had made any demand for money or for an ownership share from Facebook before suing. The case, Seglia versus Zuckerberg, U.S. District Court, Western District of New York, Buffalo. Well, when you got $26 billion at stake, my guess is Mr. Seglia just made a few billion dollars. And what's the take-home message? Get it in writing. And that goes for government employees. We're going back to the main story. Whenever dealing with a bureaucrat at a local, state, city, federal level, you make sure that the conversation is recorded. You get their name, you get their position, and you, of course, try to get them in writing in an email or any other way to confirm what you are requesting and then to confirm their response. This will go a long way towards eliminating the type of racism that is now endemic in the United States government, especially at mid-levels. And I'm laying it on the line. You want reality? There's reality. The reality of it is that in mid-level government, that the federal government in particular, there's inherent and institutional racism, primarily towards, I'm sorry to tell you, European Americans who apply for any kind of situation. You ask anyone of European American descent, and they will tell you what they experience each and every time. Now we'll take it down to the state level. Here in California, we have motor vehicle bureaus, the DMV, which we affectionately have named the Department of Mexican Voting. I called it that 10 years ago. You think that that's a funny statement? Go in there and see how the licenses are given out. See who is behind the counter. Take a look who is getting phony IDs, and take a look at the number of tattooed folk getting the phony ID so they can continue to, quote, work the system, honey. You see, the white liberal taught the illegal aliens a long time ago to work the system, honey. It's the white liberals who have brought it all down, girl. They brought it all down, girl. They took it to the streets and they brought it all down. And here we are today trying to rescue whatever is left.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, playing rock and roll from the era when the chrome was thick and the women were great.
Let's go to the hop,
oh baby.
Let's go to the hop,
oh baby.
Let's go to the hop.
Went to that car show on Sunday. You should see the bumpers on those 56, 57, 58 Cadillacs. I mean, they mined half of the New Hebrides to make those cars. So here we are facing the boredom, the tedium of the government under Barack Hussein Obama, the most incompetent administrator in the history of the presidency. And today, another embarrassment for him. A black female bureaucrat at the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been fired because a tape was released recounting the story of how she deliberately discriminated against a white farmer who was trying to save his farm, saying things that are just shocking, makes it sound like we're living in Zimbabwe. And she says things such as, so I took him to a white lawyer. I figured if I take him to one of them, his own kind would take care of him. It's tape that's hard to believe that this woman would actually hold a job unless you actually know that she's not alone. Unless you actually have tried to deal with the bureaucracy in America, especially the federal bureaucracy in the mid-levels, you wouldn't find this so shocking. Anytime you deal with mid-level bureaucrats in the federal government, I believe that Ms. Sherrod is the rule, not the exception, in terms of my experience. Now, it could be me. They don't know who I am. But it could be not me. So I say let's find out, since our esteemed Attorney General, Eric Holder, who said we're cowards when it comes to race, we won't talk about it. In a sense, he's right. White people are afraid to talk about the racism they experience from non-whites in government, in plain English. So let's do it. Let's hold it open and just try to keep it civil. And we'll go from there. Now, here's a story I got to read to you. It just came out a minute ago. California officials' $800,000 salary in a city of 38,000 triggers protests. Hundreds of residents of one of the poorest municipalities in Los Angeles County shouted in protest last night as tensions rose over a report that the city manager earns an annual salary of almost $800,000. An overflow crowd packed the city council meeting in Bell, a mostly Hispanic city of 38,000, 10 miles southeast of L.A., to call for the resignation of Mayor Oscar Hernandez and other city officials. Residents left standing outside the chamber, banged on the doors, and shouted, Fuera, or get out in Spanish. It was the first council meeting since the L.A. Times reported July 15 that Chief Administrative Officer Robert Rizzo earned $787,000 with annual 12% raises, and that Bell pays its police chief $457,000, more than Los Angeles Police Chief Charlie Beck makes in a city of 3.8 million people. Bell council members earn about $100,000 for part-time work. Now, if, again, this was an exception, I would say it's not such a great story. I would say it's the rule. I know from the small town I live in it part-time or from time to time, in Marin County, California, in the city of that I live in, I was going to give it to you, but I won't, you cannot get a pothole filled. For 5 years, I've tried to get a pothole filled, and you know what the city manager had the nerve to tell me? They don't have the money for it, but they have money for pensions. She didn't say we have the money for pensions, but I said, oh, so you mean after sending me a long letter that you don't have the money for the filling the potholes in this town of Marin County? But I said you have money for pensions, not potholes? She never answered me. I think it's time for us to look into the pensions in Marin County, California, amongst the so-called city managers, and let's take a look at why we can't get our potholes filled. Let's take a look at the inside deals going on inside some of these towns in Marin County, California, and in your county. We are being robbed. They're robbers and they're thieves, in my opinion. The pensions are out of control. The city managers are nothing but criminals in most cities in America because they've had no oversight. They've given themselves salaries and pensions that are gargantuan. And it's time for the people to throw the bums out and take their pensions back. We have had cases here in this little town of California of city workers who have done contracts, given bids, and suddenly they retire quickly and they move to North Carolina. I'm sure you've had cases in North Carolina where your city manager gave a little bid to somebody and then took out a nice pension and moved to Wyoming. They're criminals without the guts to actually hold up a bank. Why should they hold up a bank when they can hold you up? We're reviewing the council members' salaries to see if they conform to state law, said whatever. California law limits the salaries of council members to several hundred dollars a month, depending on the size of the city, right? But this is obscene pay. How did they get it? They gave it to themselves. But Hernandez, the mayor, defended his salary and the others in an interview with the LA Times. He said, our streets are cleaner. We have lovely parks, better lighting throughout the area. Our community is better, Hernandez said. These things just don't happen. They happen because he had a vision and made it happen. Well, Carmen Avalos, the city clerk in Southgate, said she attended the Bell Council meeting to help educate people about the political process. Oh, really? Educate people, the poor people, the little people. The little people are too stupid to understand how an official in a little city can be making $800,000 a year, how a police chief can be making almost $500,000 a year, how an administrative officer named Robert Rizzo can make $800,000 a year. The poor little people don't understand it. They're too stupid to understand why they justify salaries like that. Well, let's look into it. Bell has sold two general obligation bond issues totaling $50 million in the past 6 years, according to prospectuses for the bonds and information in the city's annual financial statement for 2009. In that time, the city's debt has risen to $1,972 per capita in 2009 from $599 in 2004. So in other words, what this man has done is no different than what Obama, Pelosi, and Reid have done to America. They're borrowing against their children's future. How else can Obama fly around in Air Force One? How else can Obama have Broadway shows in his living room? You know, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Apparently, Obama's. This is the Savage Nation having a discussion, a frank discussion at that, about racism inside the federal government. Let us begin in Chicago. Russell, welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your European-American bureaucrat horror story.
Dr. Savage, long-time listener. It's kind of lengthy. I dealt with the Postal Service over here right on the borderline with Chicago.
Yeah.
About a year and a half ago, I started noticing that, you know, I was being treated differently. I'm an antique dealer and seller. I sell things. I ship things, probably 20 items a week. I'm there three or four times.
Right.
And it got so out of hand where, you know, there was a change, and it just seemed like everything started changing. I'm not senile.
What do you mean? You would go in with the packages and what? You think that they were discriminating against you because you're a white man?
I'll give you an example. Okay, with me, where it all started was in 08 with one clerk, Pamela. I won't release her last name because I filed a complaint. I was down at the congressional office an hour and a half filling a complaint out last month. But anyways, I go in there and...
Wait, and the complaint probably went to Pamela's cousin working in the EOC.
You know, I have five pages. I'd be more than happy to fax you all this stuff. But
all right, but tell me what they did that makes you think it was racial rather than just incompetence.
Okay, seeing things changing. I think there was, like, changing. I mean, I've been living there for 25 years, all right? Like I said, I have all my faculties. I have a federal firearms license, which you have to be cleared and everything. I'm not a madman. I'm not a racist, nothing like that. I go in there without a chip on my shoulder. I try to be pleasant. And I go in there, and I get belittled. And I watch this. What broke my heart was maybe right before the Simpsons. There was this little old Irish woman, about 90 years old, frail old lady. She had a little shoebox she sent to Ireland, all right?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't fill out her return address correct in the correct spot.
Right.
Come up to this frail old lady. There was nobody in the post office, which is rare over there. Normally they're backed up out the door because they're so slow. But made her tell her, go over there to the side, fill out your name and address. And the woman said, oh, all I got to do is the little name and address on here. This one. Go over there. You have to do it. That's the rules. Okay? Those are the rules. You got to go over there. And she's kind of giggling with this other woman, which, you know, broke my heart. So, lo and behold, a couple days later, I'm in there for another shipment, and here comes, I won't get into race details, you can use your imagination, somebody 30 years old goes in there, they're filling out, passport, which is pretty lengthy, all right?
Yes, yes.
Fill that correctly at all, and she says, oh, don't worry, you stay here, I'll help you fill it out and everything. I swear to God, you know, I always wear chrono watches, you know, you time things.
Yes.
She was there for 15 minutes. I was standing
and,
in line.
And the postal clerk was helping him fill it out, even though she had made the little old Irish lady get off the line and fill it out and go back to the back of the bus, in essence.
The congressional report, all right, that I filled out, all right, I have had enough. You know, it got so bad that, okay, the incident that really brought...
No, I get the picture. In other words, she was showing favoritism towards people of...
And where we're at over here, it's like mostly European descent. And, you know, you can see it happening. You know, you can't say nothing. It's not politically correct, I guess. I don't know what the story is. But
well, what did I suggest people do because of the inherent racism against European-Americans going on in the bureaucracy, particularly the federal bureaucracy at middle levels? I said go in wired, number one. And number two, take a camera with you. Take their picture. Why can't you use the left wing's tactics on them? Take a camera with you and go in there and take a recorder and say, you know what? I'll tell you what I'm doing now. I'm taking your picture and I'm recording you because I don't like your treatment. I can guarantee you, you're going to get better treatment the next time you go in there. Oh, she'll scream, you're not allowed. It's federal law, blah, blah, blah. And she'll bellyache and this and that. But I can guarantee you the next time you go in, you'll go right to the head of the class. That's my opinion. Put them on notice. You're not taking it anymore. Use all the tactics on the left. Right back on them. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Mel? You are losing your mind. You need medication.
You need a kick up the ass for being a gold digging with a gun. and I want my child, and no one will believe you. So, f*** you.
So, we're bouncing back and forth between a guy who was obviously set up by someone who wore a wire, the girlfriend, and not even a wife. And we're talking again about inherent bureaucratic racism in the United States. And I'm advising you to wear a wire anytime you go in a post office or anytime you deal with the EEOC or any of the governmental agencies, record them. Now, they'll say it's illegal to record them. It doesn't matter whether it's legal to record them, and I'll tell you why. Ask your lawyer if it's legal to record them, number one. Number two, ask your lawyer if, even though it may be admissible, whether or not it will law against them. That's all there is to it. You're at war, baby. There is a war against America from within. There is a war against everything that made America great from within. Liberalism sucks. Liberalism is a racist system. Inherent in liberalism is hatred and racism. And give it back to them in spades. Fight them. Fight them and fight them. Record them. Albany, New York. Matthew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I have a perfectly logical explanation for the sound quality of Oksana versus Mel Gibson on the tapes you've been playing of them.
Go ahead.
It's really simple. Now, if you notice, when Oksana is speaking, how clear her voice is, the clarity of it.
Yes.
And then when you listen to Mel Gibson's voice, how distorted it sounds and crackly and everything. What
yes.
I'm submitting to you, Michael, is he is coming through a speakerphone, but that's not the extent of it, okay? What she's in that may prove the setup is she's in an enclosed room of some sort. It could be as simple as bed sheets hung over curtain rails tacked to the wall or
okay. All right, so how is that altering what was done? Did they alter his comments or not?
I can't hear any splits in his comments. However, I can't confirm or deny events I didn't witness. However, the sound quality shows that he is heavily distorted, which suggests he is coming through a speakerphone, and with the wire being as close to her as it is and her clarity, she is in some kind of enclosed room. I can't identify exactly what the...
All right, but in that unto itself doesn't mean anything. Are you suggesting she's in an enclosed room being coached? How to provoke him, or what is it you're suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is she is in some kind of enclosed room, so there is no reverberation or no echo to lead on that he's on a speakerphone, which entails...
But how does that shade what is going on between them, where he's freaking out, cursing her and threatening her?
Nonetheless, he is cursing her and freaking her out. This is true. However, she's been looking for this for whatever devious reason, and she has chosen to do this in closed room with whatever counsel she's had from
well,
whatever...
Well, listen to how clear... Let's play this for a minute. Here's the Mel Gibson tape, the new ones that came out. Listen to Oksana versus... listen to the Rujo versus Gibson and the difference in sound. Listen to clip 10.
My God, what an ego! Nobody would dare tell you that. You're paying them money, for God's sake.
What?
Nobody will tell you that. You're paying them money.
Oh, like you, huh? Like you?
I don't need anything from you, okay? I will disappear from your life, just like I came in.
Credit card, you callous. You never even say thank you.
Yes, I have, many times.
I say thank you every 5 minutes. And not call me mean. And not look at me, sight. That you, that's all you're good for. That's about all you're good at. That's better than music. You there?
Oh, God. God, it starts with Earth Angel, and look what it ends up with. The leg lock, and it's all over. All right, look, we've had enough of this. When I come back, all the news of the day right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And I want to thank you for setting a wonderful example because I live with three tall, good-looking women who are quite competitive and push me around under the boards all the time. But I want, you know, Malia and Sasha to know that there is absolutely no contradiction between women who are beautiful and healthy and contributing and good athletes.
Well, long tall Sally, she's a beautiful species guy. Everything that Uncle John need, oh baby. Yeah, baby. Woo, baby.
It's nice to live in interesting times, I got to tell you. Little did I think I'd wake up one day and there'd be a president talking about tall basketball playing women. With as much enthusiasm as we used to hear about conversation about astronauts, you know. I think this man will be happier if America won a basketball contest than if we put a man on Mars. But that's my own bias. Let's put it to you that way. We now move on to a phase of the Savage Nation that everyone doesn't look forward to, which is the verbal, or shall we say, audio news of the day stuff. Here we have an actor who I never heard of named Larry Hagman. I don't know who he is, but his name says it all. Hagman. Who says all politicians should try LSD at least once. Now, before we play it, the important thing for you to know is that I think most of our politicians have tried LSD at least once. Listen to clip 18.
Well, I read that David Crosby from Crosby, Stills, and Nash turned you on to LSD. What was that like?
Okay, it took the fear of death away.
How did it, what happened to you? How did that manifest?
Oh, my dear, have you heard of the white light? I went into this place that was the white light, where everything's okay.
Well, that is, I think that's worth taking.
I think it ought to be mandatory that all our politicians should do it at least once.
That's a good suggestion.
Now, the woman he is speaking with is a grandmother that he found homeless on a subway who was given a job by CNN. And we don't know her name, but it's a homeless old lady who used to sell locks on Essex Street. She was found mumbling to herself, undressed, on the IRT, and the CNN crew gave her a job. I have no idea why this is news, but it's an interesting soundbite. And now we have Senator Dianne Feinstein of China lauding Elena Kagan of Brooklyn, while Senator Jeff Sessions accuses her of being dishonest. Now, Jeff Sessions is the alpha to the omega of Feinstein. Sessions is everything right about the Senate, while Feinstein is just about everything wrong with the Senate. Let's listen to Dianne Unfeinstein in clip 13.
In my mind, there is no question about Elena Kagan's qualifications for this highest court. Magna cum laude from Harvard, clerk to Justice Marshall, a special counsel to this committee, an advisor to the President of the United States, a respected legal scholar, and the first woman to be named dean of Harvard Law School.
Yeah, all
and
by
the first
affirmative
woman
action.
Ever appointed Solicitor General.
That's right.
States.
And she pushed her way to the top through threats of lawsuit, Diane, and you know it. And the reason she should be denied her appointment is because she's unqualified at any weight. And so, therefore, let's listen now to the correct view of Kagan, which is clip 16 with Jeff Sessions, my favorite senator.
Unfortunately, throughout the testimony, I believe Solicitor General Kagan repeatedly chose to provide the committee with political spin rather than clearly and honestly admitting or describing events that were objectively capable of description. And I was quite surprised when Ms. Kagan denied the reality that she had banned the military recruiters from Harvard's recruiting office really in order to punish them because of the don't ask, don't tell policy.
Now listen to 17.
The bottom line is this. When Ms. Kagan chose to block military recruiting, the law was crystal clear. She knew she was defying the law. Her claim to this committee that she thought she was complying with the law is not accurate. Rather than admit what she did and explain it, she chose to spin the facts in a way that was at best misleading and at the worst dishonest.
Now listen to how Feinstein twists reality in clip 15.
Given the stark division on the current Supreme Court, where 5-4 decisions have overturned previously established law, it becomes more and more apparent that we need a return to the center and a justice who will urge moderation and who will push for consensus. Elena Kagan's record.
That's utter nonsense. Turn her off. I can't take it. I don't believe a word that comes out of Feinstein's mouth, not one word. Moderation from Kagan? She's an extremist at any speed. She's an extremist at any speed. Kagan is an extremist. She's unqualified. And if there was a vote, she wouldn't win. Most Americans listened to Kagan, and they voted yet. They said no. They said no, no, no. 1,000 times no. She's unqualified. She's biased. She's immoderate. She's a radical. No. But, as you well know, we no longer live in a republic. We live in something other than a republic. We live in an oligarchy where people of Feinstein's position can determine the course of human history, if you can believe it. So 1-800-449-8255 is the Savage Nation. We go on to the sound of the day. Now we come to one of my favorites, where the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, the so-called new conservative leader, meets with President Obama on their meeting, and he talks about the Lockerbie bomber, the economy, and the World Cup. And rather than talk about an American media personality named Michael Savage being banned entry to his country, not one of the spineless vermin in the media even raises the question. Instead, listen to what these two leaders talk about in clip number 20.
Thank you again, Barack, for hosting me today. While at the World Cup, our teams could only manage a score draw, I believe our relationship can be a win-win. And yes, I did enjoy drinking the 312 beer, cold, during the World Cup. I enjoyed
Turn
it so
it
much
off.
That
I can't listen to this crap. It's why America and Britain are ashamed today. We are ashamed to live in these countries today with this kind of spineless leadership. We are in a fight, in a death grip with radical Islam, and these two spineless leaders go on and on prattling about beer and sports as though we're not in a death match with radical Islam that is winning, by the way, on a daily basis because of spineless, compromised leaders like this, is what I'd like to say if I had a podium. But since I only have 8 to 10 million listeners a week, no one hears me. Apparently, I don't exist. Oh, my goodness, what a country we're living in. Look where we wound up with after 50 years of this pushing and pushing and pushing. Look who we wind up with this president. Take a look. All right, let's go on to the next soundbite, which probably won't rile me. As I just woke my dog up. I shouldn't have done that. We probably have Mel Gibson. Now we have Hillary Clinton in Pakistan giving away our money. $50 million here, $50 million there, a billion here, a billion there. You know, it adds up. And she has this to say in clip number 12.
If there were a terrorist network operating somewhere, even in the most remote place in the United States, some sheriff, you know, some local state policeman, somebody in our collective government would probably know that there was something suspicious going on. So that's why I assume somebody in this government from top to bottom does know where bin Laden is. And I'd like to know, too.
I think they're hinting, by the way, that they're going to catch bin Laden just in time for the election. And that way they don't have to go after Iran. They just bring him in and they say, look how good we are. Look what we did while the conservatives did nothing. I mean, that could be the secret. They could have him already in a holding cell waiting for, you know, keeping him on a spit, so to speak, until around October when the average moron wakes up from summer vacation. Now we have Newt Gingrich, if you can believe it. He's still alive. That's right. Newt Gingrich is actually still living. Who says Attorney General Holder should resign. Well, listen to him in clip 11.
First of all, Eric Holder should resign for national security reasons. He should certainly resign over the racism inherent in the Black Panther case. I mean, I'm happy to say that Eric Holder shouldn't be Attorney General and is not doing the job correctly.
And you, Newt Gingrich, shouldn't be a spokesman for the conservative movement anymore, by the way. So, 1-800-44. Now, it wouldn't be complete unless we play Boeing Frank.
I don't care about it unless we have a little Barney Frank out of Massachusetts. Because it's not just his speech this way that's so funny. It's actually what's inside his mind. If you actually listen to Barney Frank, you realize you're listening to a total lunatic. So let's listen to clip 4.
We put a bill through the House, and I hope the Senate will do it soon, to have the federal government buy $30 billion of preferred stock in small banks, banks of $10 billion and less in assets, if they will increase their lending to small businesses. And we can measure that. We will increase the dividend they have to pay.
Okay, Turner, I don't actually know why he speaks that. But I have a question for you. Why is it that these people who have never earned a legitimate dollar in their life other than collecting a government check, meaning a government job, senator, congressman, unless they've come from the private sector, you know, that doesn't apply. Why is it that men like Barney Frank, who have never created a product, nor have they ever created a service that anybody ever bought or wanted, do you notice how they speak about throwing about big dollars, $30 billion in preferred stock? Here's a guy who never earned $10,000 from an invention, a book, nothing. Listen to this. You can't believe this. Listen to clip five from Barney Frank.
As to the recovery, it was doing well. Unemployment was beginning to drop. We were starting to get hundreds of thousands of new jobs. And then the crisis in Europe hit. And there's no question now, as you look back over the last couple of months, if you look at what happened to unemployment, we're still gaining private sector jobs, but not nearly at the rate that we had been in April and May, or March and April. The crisis in first Greece and then elsewhere has slowed us down. That's why I am very disappointed in the Republicans. I think
Blame it on Bush. Then if you can't blame it on Bush, blame it on Nixon. If that doesn't work, blame it on a Republican from the 1800s. What do you mean we were getting hundreds of thousands of new jobs? In the government, you were giving jobs. Let me give you an example. You look around America, some of the most beautiful public works projects in this country were commissioned by FDR during the 1930s when the country was climbing out of a recession. I agree. I admit it. I look around some of the finest buildings, tunnels, some of the great edifices are at the WPA. My father worked in the WPA. It saved him. He had no job. He got a job as a chauffeur for a state assemblyman. I still don't know how he got that job. He's gone too long for me to even know. I don't know how he got it. He had no connections. He was just an immigrant kid. I still don't know how he got the job. But he got a job. He couldn't get work. So he got a job as a chauffeur through the WPA, I believe. You know, state job. And it enabled him to put bread on the table, so to speak. So I do understand that government spending up to a certain point can produce jobs and it can produce construction projects that are important. On the other hand, the amount of graft and the amount of corruption inherent in such must be curtailed by government watchdog agencies. And I don't know that it's being done to the extent that it needs to be done. In other words, there's nothing wrong with road projects in America today or building new bridges and tunnels if we actually need them, so long as there is adequate oversight and there's no big bid rigging and things of that nature. But I don't know who's actually watching these things. I really don't know. For example, here in San Francisco, as I told you, I went to a car show over the weekend at the Presidio. The Presidio is a former army base with one of the national cemeteries for the fallen war dead. Well, they're expanding a piece of the highway that runs right through the cemeteries. I don't know if they've actually moved the graves of some of the fallen soldiers, but I do know that it's a mammoth construction project, something on an order I have not seen in the last 30 years in San Francisco. It's a monster project. They're building four tunnels and they're doing a highway reconstruction. It's at least a $1 billion highway construction job. The question I have is, who's getting the overtime? You see lights on that job at 12 o'clock at night if you're going over the Golden Gate Bridge. Somebody's collecting quadruple pay. Is somebody watching this? Does somebody know who's getting the money? Who got the contracts? Who did the bids? I mean, things of that nature. So it's not just, it's not that I'm opposed to federal spending per se. Some federal spending is rational. Public works projects are important. The question is, who is administering these projects? Who is conducting the oversight on these projects? That's the real issue here. And so therefore, as I say, you can be a knee-jerk conservative or you can be a knee-jerk liberal, both of which don't lead us to the truth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Don't confuse me with Spartacus, because Spartacus I am not. I'm only a talk show host. I am not a revolutionary. You say you want to start a revolution, leave me out of it. I am only a commentator. You do what you want. I'll do what I want. Quies custodie ipsos custodes. Pardon my Latin. I always mangle it. I only know botanical Latin. I know some zoological Latin, and I know some medical Latin, but other than that, I mangle my Latin. But the statement itself is quite good. Quies custodie ipsos custodius, which means in Latin from the poet Juvenal, who will guard the guardians or who watches the watchmen, or who will guard the guards? You see, the essential problem was posed by Plato in his great book, The Republic, his great book on the work of government and morality. And in that book, he describes the perfect society. The main character in this Socratic dialogue relies on laborers, slaves, and tradesmen. The guardian class is to protect the city, the police, the soldiers. And so the question is put to Socrates, who will guard the guardians, or who will protect us against the protectors? Plato's answer to this is that they will guard themselves against themselves. He said, we must tell the guardians a noble lie. The noble lie will assure them that they are better than those that they serve, and it is therefore their responsibility to guard and protect those lesser than themselves. We will instill in them a distaste for power or privilege. They will rule because they believe it right, not because they desire it. But you see, we are no longer talking about the police and the military when we ask who will guard the guards. We are talking about the Bonnie Franks. We are talking about the Dianne Feinsteins. We are talking about the Elena Kagans. They are those who think that they're better than us. They are those who are manipulating our society into a puddle that it was never meant to be. They are those who think that America's Constitution was written on nutty putty, made for their amusement. And so, ladies and gentlemen, be very careful. Because although we have a government that is built upon the separation of powers, we have a presidency that has become increasingly like an autocracy. And so as long as the watchers are a small and potentially corruptible group, as are so many of our leaders, the question that is asked is sort of a paradox, and perhaps an example of how we have regressed as a society, not as we have progressed. 1-800-449-8255. Sorry for the highfalutin stuff, but every once in a while I have to revert to the PhD within. Chris in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because you mentioned, or you asked, why is it that it seems that people in Europe tend to invent more than people elsewhere in the globe? And the reason is, was based in a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel by a UCLA professor.
Right.
And he said that it's because of food. And the reason is because in Europe there was more food, and since people could grow more food, it left others to...
All right, so they became more, they had more brain power, in other words, from food. That's one theory. Well, let me say this. Let's talk about white male inventions. Let's start with trains, planes, cars, rockets, telescopes, tires, telephones, radios, television, electricity, atomic energy, computers, and fax machines. All of these miracles are made possible by the minds and spirits of men with names like Ampere, Bell, Caselli, Edison, Ohm, Faraday, Einstein, Cohen, Teller, Shockley, Hertz, Marconi, Morse, Popov, Ford, Volta, Michelin, Dunlop, Watt, Diesel, Galileo, and other dead white males. So the question is, why? What I'm asking is tantamount to blasphemy in these politically insane times. Yet truth is truth. How long are we going to pretend that origins themselves play no role in our world? The origins of the invention, science, technology, and economics of the world in which we live. Ladies and gentlemen, the fact of the matter is, this is not to discredit the many contributions coming from non-Europeans, but fact is fact. Our most important and consequential inventions have come almost exclusively from white males. And so if you don't believe me, go and look at the list. Take a look at the names. Ampere, Bell, Caselli, Edison, Ohm, Faraday, Einstein, Ford, Volta, Michelin, Dunlop, Watt, Diesel, Galileo, and other dead white males.
Savvy.
Sorry.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I have a transcript of the black bureaucrat at the U.S. Department of Agriculture who has been caught on tape recounting the story of how she deliberately discriminated against a white farmer who was trying to save his farm. Is America turning into the new Zimbabwe under Obama? Would you like to hear the transcript of Shirley Sherrod, the black bureaucrat? Here it is. The first time I was faced with having to help a white farmer save his farm, he took a long time talking. But, you know, he was trying to show me he was superior to me. I know what he was doing, but he had to come to me for help. What he didn't know while he was taking all that time trying to show me he was so superior to me was I was trying to decide just how much help I was going to give him. I was struggling with the fact that so many black people had lost their farmland, and here I was faced with having to help a white person save their land. So I didn't give him the full force of what I could do. I did enough so that when I assumed the Department of Agriculture had sent him to me, either that or the Georgia Department of Agriculture, and he needed to go back and report that I did try to help him. So I took him to a white lawyer that had attended some of the training that we had provided, because Chapter 12 bankruptcy had just been enacted for the family farm. So I figured if I take him to one of them, that his own kind would take care of him. That's when it was revealed to me that it's about the poor versus those who have. It's not so much about white. It is about white and black, but it's not, you know. It opened my eyes, because I took him to one of his own. There you go. Black bureaucrat inside the U.S. Department of Agriculture discriminating against a white farmer. Now, she has been fired, which is the right step. But if you think she is alone, you are mistaken. You see, the media always claims that white racism is more pernicious because it is institutional racism. Well, this isn't just institutional racism. This is governmental racism. Racially discriminating against white people. Racial discrimination being actively promoted by the federal government. Has anything like this ever happened to you, I asked? If you are a white person, have you ever been discriminated against by a government employee who was not white? Tell us your story. And do you think Obama is stirring up racial enmity in this country and making it a more racially charged nation? I certainly do. Let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. The racist left-wing media is always talking about the fake racism of the Tea Parties, but it refuses to focus on the racism of the NAACP. I'd like you to listen closely to the audio of a black bureaucrat within the U.S. Department of Agriculture talking about racially discriminating against the poor white farmer.
I was speaking to that group like I've done many groups, and I tell them about a time when I thought the issue was race and race only. And I tell them the story of how I worked with a white farmer back in 1986. I was not working for the Department of Agriculture. I was working with a nonprofit organization assisting farmers throughout South Georgia and the Southeast. This farmer came to me for help. I was telling the story about how working with him helped me to see that the issue is not about race. It's about those who have versus those who do not have. And I tell how I took him to a lawyer who I thought would help him. In the end, that lawyer didn't.
She didn't give him the full force of what she could do because he was a white farmer? Is this Zimbabwe? And listen to what comes next.
In the end, I had to frantically look for a lawyer because when USDA lifted... When the courts lifted the injunction against USDA in May of 1987, this white farmer was one of 13 that was foreclosed on by the state of Georgia. I had to frantically find a lawyer who would file a Chapter 11 to stop the foreclosure.
She took him to a white lawyer? One of his own kind? This is the most vile type of racism imaginable, straight out of the U.S. government. Meanwhile, what's Obama doing? talking about basketball.
I know how much hard work goes into a championship season, but I hear that one of the real keys to the Mercury's title is sitting in the audience. For those who of you who don't know, assistant coach Julie Hairgrove and her kids are the lucky charms of this team. Where are they? Sleeping?
Over there.
Not that excited to see the president.
Huh? Obama dribbles while Rome burns.
And I want to thank you for setting a wonderful example, because I live with three tall, good-looking women who are quite competitive and push me around under the boards all the time. But I want, you know, Malia and Sasha to know that there is absolutely no contradiction between women who are beautiful and healthy and contributing and good athletes.
I was reading about death and from skin cancer as I was trying to, like, you know, cheer myself up. It said deadly cancer soars in women. Now, you're going to take it wrong, not because it soars in women. I'll tell you why I said it made me happy in a strange way. It says melanoma among the young increased by 50% between 1980 and 2004, study finds. The reason I'm happy is not because they got sick and died of cancer. It's because I stopped sitting in the sun around 1980 when I first got, you know, the skin cancer, went to the dermatologist, and they warned me. And he said, you had all the sun you ever have for the rest of your life, you never need it. Because I remember going back to when I was a little kid. What did my mother know? God bless her, Mom, please don't get mad at me in heaven. They knew nothing. They thought the more sun, the better. The more you burnt the skin off a child, the better the child was. So they put you in the sun, perhaps in a swimming pool in the Catskill Mountains in the 1950s, and they let you sit there and play till the skin burned off your back. And they'd say, you look good, you got color. You got color. Little they know they were killing the child. It's the same with the food. They thought the fattier the food, the better the food. The heavier the food, the better the food. The fatter the kid, the better the kid. They didn't mean anything by it. They were trying to be good. You know, what can I tell you? It's just a societal thing. So 5, 6, 7, 8 times I've had them removed from my head because I know, and I like the sun, and I don't sit in the sun. But girls, ladies, women, children, boys and girls, for God's sakes, the sun is your enemy. It is your enemy. Increase in the use of tanning salons. Exposure to the sun's damaging rays. Melanoma. It's one of the worst cancers to die from. There's no such thing as a good cancer. But it's horrible. And the only good news about this is that if it's caught early enough, you can probably have the early, you know, cells that have turned bad removed and prevent the melanoma from forming. In young men, melanoma rates level off between 1980 and 2004, which is interesting. So apparently men don't go to as many, you know, tanning booths or whatever. This is very serious stuff. This has nothing to do with liberal or conservative, unless you're crazy and you want to say, let's see, I hate Savage. I hate everything he says. He's never right. So if he says the sun is bad, the sun is good, I think I'm going to go sit in the sun now for 3 weeks in a row. Go ahead, be my guest. I hope every liberal on the Upper East Side who voted for Obama and thinks he's great, go sit in the sun now for 3 months. Do me a favor. In fact, sit in the sun 10 hours a day until the election comes out. That's what I'd like you to do. Do me a favor. Since everything I say is wrong and I don't know anything that I'm talking about, go sit in the sun now every day right till election day if you disagree. How stupid can you be? Even your enemies sometimes know what they're talking about. But I'm not your enemy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Socialized medicine or Obamacare was forced against the American people, against everyone's objections. Now we're starting to see what the real cost of this plan is going to cost us. Joining us now is Mike Tanner from the Cato Institute, who has just completed a 52-page study about the costs. Mike Tanner, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. I think what's particularly interesting about what we've learned about Obamacare since the bill's passage a little over 100 days ago is not just how everything that opponents said about the bill looks like it's going to come true, but what a miserable failure this bill is on its proponents' own criteria. I mean, if you listen to what the president and the Democratic leaders in Congress said about this bill before it became law, they promised that this was going to extend health insurance coverage to every American, that it was going to reduce health care costs, that it was going to reduce insurance premiums for the average American, and that we were going to be able to keep the health insurance that we have today if we like it. On each one of those criteria, the evidence that has come in over the last 3.5 months suggests that they were absolutely wrong.
Why didn't the communist experts see this coming?
Well, we certainly should have seen this coming because a lot of this was predicted in advance. We know that before the bill passed, that the Congressional Budget Office warned that it was not going to reduce insurance premiums. We know that the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Studies warned that this was going to increase, not decrease, health care spending. And since the bill became law, we have seen additional studies suggesting that that is exactly what is going to happen. We know that this bill will add over $300 billion to total health care spending in this country. And we know that the bill itself, or the law, is going to cost a lot more than was originally projected. You can remember when Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi came out and almost sprained their shoulders, patting themselves on the back, because they said that they had gotten the cost of this bill down to $950 billion, as if $950 billion wasn't a lot of money. But that's not even close to the actual cost of this bill. We now know that if you include the $105 billion in administrative costs to implement the bill that were not included in the original appropriation, and if you include the cost of the so-called doc fix, that is to repeal the Medicare cuts that this bill assumed was going to take place, and which Democrats have already postponed for 6 months and have introduced legislation to repeal, and if you assume that the cost of the bill is going to keep increasing at 6% a year, which is after 2019, which is the cost, the percentage increase before 2019, then you can look at this bill over 10 years of actual operation and suggest that it's going to cost closer to $2.7 trillion. And that, by any measure, is real money.
Where is the outcry in Washington, D.C. and the media? Hello?
Well, we're certainly seeing the continued unpopularity of this bill among voters and among the public. Traditionally, bills become more popular after they become law. Even something that's remarkably unpopular during the debate leading up to its passage tends to become much more popular after it's passed. Americans, by and large, tend to move on. They tend to say, okay, it's passed, it's law now, let's give it a chance, and its popularity goes up. That's not happened with this legislation. A Pew poll that just came out within the last week suggests that only 35% of the population approves of this bill. 47% say they want to repeal it as soon as possible. So this bill has not gotten more popular with the public. What is worrisome, however, is that there seems to be a remarkable reluctance on the part of the Republican leadership to really take on this bill. In the House, John Boehner had to be dragged kicking and screaming to sign on to a discharge petition for legislation that would repeal the bill. Not that it has a real chance of passing, but it still would have been a symbolic statement. They finally got the House leadership for Republicans to sign the bill. In the Senate, however, Mitch McConnell and the Senate leadership have not signed on to such a bill yet. So I think there's a real question of whether the Republicans are going to stand up and holler and scream about this.
Why are the Republicans not standing up?
Well, I think that there's a certain reason why Republican Party is called the stupid party. I think that there is a strategic short-sightedness, and they've decided that this is in the past, and they've moved on to other sort of targets of opportunity. Oh, we'll beat them up about the oil spill in the Gulf, because that's what's on the public's mind. Oh, no, this week the public's thinking about the deficit. Okay, we'll talk about spending. They sort of can't get beyond what's in the nightly news cycle in order to develop a strategic plan for the future.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, the most immediate thing is that there are a number of lawsuits, of course, challenging the individual mandate in the bill, which is the kind of the key component of the bill. And we may hear within the next month on the first of those lawsuits, a lawsuit filed by the state of Virginia is taking place in what's called the Rocket Docket, the circuit court in the D.C., Virginia area, because it's called that because it moves so quickly. The Justice Department filed a petition to dismiss the suit, saying that Virginia didn't have standing to bring suit. That case has been heard in the court, and we could see a decision on that within the next month or so. Either way, that decision will be appealed, and we're still waiting, of course, for another lawsuit that came out of some 13 states that's filed down in Florida. So we have several things still pending on this.
What can we, the people, do?
Well, I think that we can hold the lawmakers responsible for this bill come November. Certainly, those who voted for it should have to pay a price. But even the Republicans or Democrats who voted against it, their feet need to be held to the fire for repeal or at the very least to refuse to fund it next year. I think that the American public cannot let this bill fade into the past and say there's nothing they can do about it. This is one of the biggest threats to individual liberty and to our free market economy that has ever passed Congress. And I think that it is not something that we can just shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, it's done, time to move on. This fight's got to continue.
Mike Tanner, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on. Appreciate it very much.
Savage.
I recently mentioned an article written by Grace Voto that spoke about the bigger picture of Michael Savage being banned from Britain as an attack on all of our free speech and foreshadowing of things to come. She joins us now. Grace Voto, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and thank you so much also for linking to our cover story, the cover story of Reflections magazine, which is Who's Afraid of Michael Savage? We are so honored that you have linked to us, and we are right with you in this crusade to have your rights defended.
With so few in the mainstream media talking about this story, why did you write this?
I think, Michael, that the thrust of the piece that I wrote on your behalf was really to try to explain to the public, the American public, that your story is not just the story of a single man, although, of course, that's very important to you. But I wanted to just explain that this is a symptom of a great crisis that we are facing here in the West, and that your case has really geopolitical ramifications. And I'm really not exaggerating when I say that. I say in my article that this marks a low point in the history of the English-speaking peoples, because what I see here is the Anglo-American alliance in tatters. That is to say, two of the great leaders in world history, Great Britain and America, now abandoning some of the sacred principles that they have held dear and some of the very sacred principles that they have worked in partnership to promote. So your case, I really want to emphasize this, has geopolitical ramifications.
Well, what are these ramifications?
Well, we see on the one hand that the British banning you from entering their soil is a symbol of the fact that they are following the policy of appeasement. They are not really concerned about regarding what you had to say, Michael. What you said ultimately is really irrelevant. You're just a scapegoat. A scapegoat in a larger crusade. And that crusade is to appease the Muslim world. As you wrote in your book, they simply wanted to show balance on their terrorist list. They wanted to present it as though the fact that they're banning some Islamist terrorists from entering their soil, it's not really ethnic profiling, because, you see, we also put a well-known American personality on the list.
Exactly.
In reality, you could have said absolutely anything. You could have said, I love pigs. And they would have said, oh, we've got to put this guy on the terrorist list to ban him from entering on our soil, because we must appease the Muslims. This is all about appeasing the Islamists and an attempt, their attempt to be even-handed, fair and balanced. However, what we see is that they're not being fair and balanced. They're being weak and cowardly. And the English are drifting from their own heritage. They were pioneers of individual liberty, of democracy, of capitalism, all these things that they have held so valiantly throughout their history. And now, in order to appease the Muslims, they're willing to throw these in the trash. And what do we see happening with the conservative government that came to power, the conservative government now led by Mr. Cameron? The same absolute cowardice. In addition to the cowardice that we're seeing from the British, we are seeing that they're essentially following the lead of America, because it is our own president who is setting the trend, setting the model for how to deal with the Muslim world, which is simply one of apologize, apologize, appease, appease, try to give them the impression that we are all wrong and they are all right, and somehow by doing this, their jihad against us will disappear. Of course, this is absolute folly.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
And what I find extremely alarming, too, is that as Obama tries to appease our enemies, he has also destroyed some of our traditional alliances, alliances that have upheld the torch of liberty, the alliance that the British and Americans have had, especially very strongly throughout the second half of the 20th century. It was Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt who together upheld democracy and freedom against Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. They then upheld the torch of liberty throughout the Cold War against the communists. And even after we were struck, after the jihadists struck us on 9/11, it was then Prime Minister Tony Blair and our President Bush, who together maintained the Anglo-American alliance. But when Barack Obama came to power, he decided that there was going to be a new foreign policy. And this new foreign policy consists of, as I said, appeasing our enemies, and you know what, doing the really brilliant thing of antagonizing our friends. As you recall, one of the first acts that he did was he sent back the bust of Winston Churchill to the British, because Obama resents the British imperial legacy. And he also antagonized the labor leader, Gordon Brown, by giving him these inconsiderate gifts, further snubbing him. And then he went on a tirade against British Petroleum, further antagonizing the British. So that polls show now that the British believe, that the majority of Brits believe, that the current administration is anti-British.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we see here is the collapse of the Anglo-American alliance. And as that collapses, the two nations that have been instrumental in defending individual liberty are essentially cowering. They're weak. They're incapable of resisting the jihadists among us. So all of that to say that this is not just the case of one man. This is not just the plight of one man, however difficult it might be for you. What is happening is symptomatic of a great crisis in the Western world, where the Anglo-American alliance is in tatters, where we are bowing to the Islamist jihadists who threaten our way of life, and where we no longer know our own heritage and we are no longer able to defend it. And so that is why we stand with you 1,000% of the way. And we do so because of our care for you as an individual, but also because of our enlightened self-interest, our regard to preserve ourselves, our own national history, which is one that is based on defending individual rights, defending individual liberty, and defending everyone's right to travel freely and to speak freely.
Why do you think so few in the media will talk about my being banned in Britain?
Well, I think you can count on the mainstream media consistently to miss all important stories. So I think that that's part of the crisis amongst us, is that we no longer even recognize what's a good story and what isn't a good story, when we're under threat, when we're not under threat, who's our enemy, who isn't our enemy. We were dealing with an extremely ignorant mainstream media. And I can say that from someone who worked within the mainstream media. That's point number one. The second point I have to say is that even amongst conservatives, we have a collapse amongst on the right as well, in this sense, is that conservatives are not very good at working together. They're not very good at working in tandem. They're not very good at working in harmony. Unfortunately, many conservatives are self-interested. They work really for themselves as they defend traditional values. And we're not going to succeed against the liberals if we continue along that path. And the third thing I have to say is that even within conservative news organizations, and I'm saying this as someone who worked within a conservative news organization, there are so many liberals there trying to squash the conservative voice that it's very hard, even for the most well-meaning conservatives, to rally to the defense of conservative causes. And that's one of the reasons that I founded the Edmund Burke Institute in my own magazine. I thought, you know what? The only way that I will truly be free is and be able to truly defend the Western heritage is to go at it alone. And that's why I decided more and more to go independent. And I think you're seeing this even manifested in the Tea Party movement, which is basically saying our traditional institutions are not working. They are collapsing. And the Tea Party movement is essentially voicing the very same cry that I had in 2005 when I founded my own institute, saying, you know what? The traditional institutions don't work, and the only way we're going to preserve our Judeo-Christian heritage, the only way we're going to preserve our liberties, is to go independent.
Well, I've been saying that for years on the Savage Nation.
And that is the sad, sad fact that we are now facing in America. And I have to say, I'm very, very pessimistic. I'm pessimistic also from the point of view as an educator. You know, when I talk about the Anglo-American heritage and I put all this in a larger geopolitical context, I'm speaking as a historian and as somebody who used to teach the youth. And I was just dismayed at the ignorance out there. And one of the reasons that the mainstream media doesn't follow important stories is sometimes they're just plain dumb. I have to say, they're absolutely stupid. Some of the people that I worked with side by side, I was aghast at their level of ignorance. And that's another reason that I just decided to go at it alone. So I think what you're seeing more and more, you're seeing this reflected in the homeschool study movement, which is burgeoning across this nation, and so many people being so disenchanted with the establishment institutions. It's as though those of us who are highly educated, those of us who are people of courage and who want to take a moral stand, we believe the only way to do it is with alternative media, alternative forums. And that's another reason why I stand steadfastly on this, because we have to band together. We're under assault, not just, you know, from governments like Great Britain is prosecuting you, Michael, but we're under assault as conservative individuals everywhere in this country.
Where can we read more?
Your listeners can read much more at www.edmundburkeinstitute.org. They can click on Reflections Magazine, which is our monthly web magazine. I also invite many of members of your brilliant audience to get in touch with me if they seek to make a contribution, if there's articles that they would like to publish and they have been blackballed in the mainstream media. Please get in touch with us. So all of that can be found at www.edmundburkeinstitute.org.
Grace Voto, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's really been an honor. Thanks again for linking to our piece and reflections. And if ever you need a soldier to stand by you, you know you can count on Grace Voto.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Each time we have a quarrel, it almost breaks my heart. 'Cause I am so afraid that we will have to part. Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love?
Enough roll, let's go back to rocks. That is the politics of rocks. Here are some of the stories that are on MichaelSavage.com. Gang members are coming home with military training. What? That's right. Many gangbangers are enlisting and have enlisted in the military to get military training and steal weapons and Kevlar vests. Take a look at the article. Documents show the media was plotting to kill stories about Reverend Wright to make sure that no one could connect him to Obama. That's why we have him as president. Osama bin Laden's kin are hoping for a haven in the U.S. A son of Osama bin Laden said about 20 members of his family stranded in Iran are seeking sanctuary in the United States. Now, I want to ask you something. What if we were at war with Germany and Adolf Hitler had a son who wanted asylum in the United States and we had a German-American president? Do you think there'd be an outcry if they were granted amnesty or asylum? Now, speaking of race, here's a nice racial story for you from WorldNet Daily. Poor whites need not apply. What do I mean by that? To have the same chance of gaining admission as a black student with an SAT score of 1100, a Hispanic student equally matched in characteristics would have to have 1230, a white student would have to achieve 1410, and an Asian student 1550. In other words, Asians are the most discriminated against, then whites, and even Hispanics are discriminated against in order to make sure that blacks are pushed forward. Check it out. We didn't invent the data. You want race talk? You'll get race talk. The real McCoy. Big pot. Oakland to grow for dopers. That's right. The city of Oakland is going to grow four farms, create four farms for the marijuana heads amongst them. Is the NAACP blind to Farrakhan? Asks Stanley Crouch. And what about Obamacare? Firms in Massachusetts are canceling health coverage. They simply can't afford the Romney care in Massachusetts.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Now, if you think that I hate San Francisco, you're mistaken. I love San Francisco. I love the city. I love the people who built it. I love the memory of those who built it. I love the foresight of some previous administrations who gave us the beauty that we have in the city. But I got to tell you, there's nothing to beat a night in San Francisco after the show. I went and walked down around the ferries and the tourist ferries. I looked at the paddle wheelers. And I'm thinking of having a big, I'm a man in love with the bay and the sea. I got to tell you, you know that I love boating. So after the show, I was alone walking around there by myself on the waterfront. And I look at the paddle wheelers and I think, you know what? I think I'm going to have another pre-election eve giant 2,000, 3,000 person at sea rally. You know, sort of a paddle wheeler at sea. I don't know when my book comes out, whatever. And I got all excited about it. I made some calls. I made my way over to Alioto's for a couple of drinks. They were stiff ones, real stiff ones, real, real stiff ones. It's getting harder and harder for me to, you know, decompress after a show. Now, I see people running along the Embarcadero. That's okay. That's one way to decompress. My way of decompressing is having a very stiff drink or two. I think that's also a very good way to decompress. I don't think there's any evidence that running your heart out is going to have you live any longer than drinking a couple of drinks at night. But anyway, that's my opinion. There are some other stories on my site, Beowulf, that are really worth talking about. Failed device on BP rig was modified in China. For those animal lovers amongst you, fewer than 400 Sumatran tigers are left in the wild. Indonesian police have arrested two men on Sumatra Island with six tiger skulls and other parts from the critically endangered species. Michelle Bachmann has formed a Tea Party caucus. That's good. That is very, very good. And read about the retired FDNY Johnny Lungs, who is milking the system with tax-exempt disability pension. And you cannot believe what this long-distance runner who is bilking the system is doing next. You think pensions are fair? We don't. U.S. struggles, D.C. booms. Chatty ex-governor to testify. Jobless in Cuba, communism faces the unthinkable. They're laying off workers while Obama is hiring federal workers. Hundreds of dead penguins wash up on Brazil shores. USDA official quits over racial remarks to NAACP. How she withheld help to a white farmer facing bankruptcy. Huh, nice lady. Sperm bank offers chance for baby that looks like a favorite celebrity. That's nice. Two 70-somethings killed after mid-air skydiving collision. And finally, boys growing up in pious Muslim families are more violent. A new German study shows that boys growing up in pious Muslim families are more likely to be violent. Isn't it nice how all religions are equal? What? All religions are equal, not. And don't miss your opportunity to buy Healing Children Naturally, written by Michael Savage, the parent of two, the author of 17 books on health and nutrition. What it gives you are A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints. Parents, grandparents, click on michaelsavage.com and help your child avoid drugs and medication where possible, and tell a friend about it. Available only on michaelsavage.com. Let's hear some more rock and roll. But anyway, here we are. I mean, if you can walk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. I read it to my children when they were young. I learned it when I was young. And believe me, Rudyard Kipling had it exactly right. Savage.